Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Scott Benedetti with the Pedowitz Group. I'm the Director of Demand Generation here, and I'm stepping in for our CRO, Debbie Guy-Geese. Our guest today is Sarah Fisher from Building Engines, and our topic today is content relevance to the new revenue marketer. Sarah, let's start out by letting you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Building Engines.
Hi, well, thanks to Pedowitz Group for having me here today. My name is Sarah Fisher. I am the Director of Marketing Communications at Building Engines. And Building Engines is basically a property and tenant management solution, and it's web-based, so we take all those different silos of data that help run a building or a portfolio of real estate, and it's all run out of a single web-based application that tenants and management can log into and manage everything having to do with their property. So.
Excellent. So you touch into the real estate market.
Yes,
and you're
do.
A brand new revenue marketer. So this is your first effort at Building Engines for marketing automation.
So it's actually my first effort. I'm a baby revenue marketer. This is the first time I've used it when we installed it at Building Engines. So.
Awesome. So let me just take a minute to, as we introduce Sarah and get started on revenue marketer, let's define what a revenue marketer is. Some people have heard of it because we continue to push that phrase, but a lot of people have not heard of the term before. So a revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. It's not another check in your to-do box who has revenue-related accountability through different types of campaigns. These people are actually tied to the revenue engine with sales. They've established some level of sales and marketing alignment, and they're responsible for the top of the sales funnel, for building leads, interacting with those leads, nurturing those leads until they're sales ready or sales qualified. So, Sarah, as you began this journey of selecting a marketing automation tool and introduced this to your company, tell us a little bit about what your thoughts were there.
So let me start with why we looked at marketing automation in the first place.
Excellent.
We're a small company, so we first off just didn't have the resources to really get all the touches that we wanted. And we were doing a lot of what I call random acts of marketing. So there was no planned nurturing. It was just, you know, ad hoc things here and there, which would lead to a spike when you sent it out, but then a big drop off. So we weren't moving them through the sales process as best as we could. So that's why we went out and looked at marketing automation so that we could get the most out of the resources we have here and have continual things going on in the background and really understand our customers' digital body language.
Mm-hmm.
As far as selecting, we went through a very detailed process full of spreadsheets, and we looked at a lot of feature and functionality comparisons. It might have been a little overkill looking back in retrospect. But what was important to us was that we get started quickly. The board and the CEO wanted us to get in a week and get a campaign out within 2 weeks. So it was a pretty quick process. So it was important that we found something that wouldn't overwhelm our small marketing group and that we could get up and running quickly.
Interesting. So this was a top-down driven effort. The board and the C-level executives knew about it and wanted you to go out and solicit a vendor and put this type of technology in?
Yeah, you know, we sold them on it, and then thankfully we got them on board quickly, and then it was like, okay, when are we going to get the first campaign out the door?
Right. So they made the investment and said, okay, we got to push you a little bit and find out when you're going to start generating leads. Now, again, let me just make a quick announcement for our guests. We've got a bunch of people in the chat room. You can call into the show, 646-478-5604 if you have questions and you'd like to be live online. We can put you there for questions, or you can chat them if you sign in to the chat window if you have questions for Sarah. And Sarah is a new revenue marketer. I'm Scott Benedetti. I'm the Director of Demand Generation with the Pedowitz Group. Debbie had to step away from the show for a moment. She may or may not be back, but I think we'll be able to get through. So you've selected a system. You got through what I always call the analysis paralysis and spreadsheet comparisons. You got it up and running, got it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we didn't even go through the normal implementation process. We kind of did the speed version of it.
Right.
So we got everything in there, and then we got our probably the end of May, we started working on it, and we got our first campaign out in the first week of June. So
that's great. And did you have some metrics in place to measure your results there?
I mean, we were using very basic metrics on that first campaign, just looking at, you know, email performance and click-throughs. We're getting a little more comprehensive now, obviously, but start small, baby steps.
Great. And so tell us a little bit about where you found the content, because the marketing automation eats content kind of like a baby eats formula, right? What did you do to get your content together to prepare to deliver the messages?
So this has been the mammoth project that we've been undertaking, and, you know, it does take a lot of time to do it right, but it's a critical process. So once we got the marketing automation system in, we're like, great, we can track our customers' digital body language. You know, we have this tool to create powerful targeted nurture programs, but, geez, that means we need a lot of really quality content to feed those nurturing programs, which made us take a hard look and do a content inventory of what we have, which is kind of the first step. And, you know, what we needed to do this content audit was basically sit down and work through what our customers' buying process is and the questions that they have along each stage of that buying process, and then figure out, okay, how can our content answer that? So it is kind of a daunting process at first. To sit down and take inventory of everything you have, and then we basically, you know, take each piece and say, okay, what persona does this apply to? What stage does this apply to? Can we reuse this? Should we, you know, just kill this piece? Can we take part of this piece? And so we literally went through everything we had, and we're then able to uncover the gaps, which is key. You know, important things we realized we didn't have a lot for the to attract and nurture prospects early on was something we noticed. So that's what we're working on. And we didn't have some key late-stage pieces either. So it is a really important process to uncover your gaps and be able to align to the, you know, the sales process.
So that brings up an interesting question in my mind, Sarah. How did you go about discerning your customers' or your prospects' buying process?
So we sat down as a team, and this was not, you know, a couple meetings. This was over weeks, and went through a series of exercises, you know, where we identified, we had the executives in the room, and we identified everything we could get out on the table about, you know, the questions that our buyers have that from experience they've, you know, experienced during the sales process and interacting with prospects. Got it all out, recorded it, and, you know, then at the end finally mapped it to each buying stage, basically.
Okay. So I'm curious, did you involve any customers in that, you know, in those discussions? Did anybody call a customer and say, what were your thoughts when you went through considering building engines as a vendor?
You know what, that's probably, we did a little, but I think that's probably our biggest flaw in the process that we learned was we probably could have done more of that. Thankfully, we have a team who's, most of them have been here for years and years, so they have lots of experience of interactions with the customers and had a good idea, but again, we should have probably involved them more.
You know, we find as we go out and help clients, and actually as we do our systems internally, we revisit the content audit almost every 2 months. And realign our content development and content plans, because things change in the market and things change as people interact with us both online and live, and then, of course, in client engagements. So you'll have an opportunity to do that again, I'm sure, many times over you know, over the rest of this year, perhaps the beginning of next. You talked a little bit about sales and aligning the sales process with that. When did sales get involved, you know, in your consideration for the marketing automation program?
They were actually involved in some of the initial just selection process, sitting in on some of the kind of final demos. We're pretty aligned in our organization. We have a small, close-knit group, so that's to our advantage. But the sales guys were an easy sell because they're getting better quality leads now, and they just have so much more insight. They love going on and seeing who's been on the website, you know, what's the activity. So, I mean, for that aspect, marketing automation was an easy alignment with them.
It was an easy sale to a sales guy hungry for a warm lead, right?
Yep, and a good lead, not just any lead.
Yeah, great. No, that's important because that really is what gets the buy-in of everybody and ultimately delivers the ROI that you're looking for, you know, at the end of a period of time. And so from a metric standpoint, have they changed from when you did your initial analysis and spreadsheets and we're looking at the reporting aspects of these types of systems to what you're measuring now and delivering now?
You know, it's still a work in progress, to be honest. We've gotten a lot better. And the hard thing about when you are new to marketing automation is you're not going to see results tomorrow. It's kind of like you get this big water wheel going and you're pushing and it takes, you know, months before you really see the effect of those leads moving through the entire pipeline. So I know that, you know, it's still happening, but we are definitely getting better about this whole process. Caused us to really think about our sales cycle too. So now we've really thought it through and got it right. And now we're paying attention to new leads coming in, how many leads are moving to the next stage, who's, you know, how many aren't, and the time it's taking to move them along. And so we can adjust things where we need to, which is great. You know, that's the good part of the whole process.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier you did your content analysis. What types of assets do you guys use for content?
We've been on the video bandwagon, so, you know, we have a lot. We're doing a lot more with video. We're doing a lot more with curating and just creating like really value-added, content-rich microsites that aren't pounding our chests about building engines, but about just bringing value and showing that we have more to offer. You know, so we've had a lot of success with that. You know, we have just regular email campaigns too, the traditional, but we're doing a lot more of kind of multimedia things too.
So you say video bandwagon, and it does seem to be a bandwagon.
Yeah.
How do you go about building that from a video standpoint? Do you outsource that, or do you do that in-house, or a little bit of both? Or
we do it in-house. I mean, for small companies, again, it's so easy to do. We literally have one of those little flip vids, HD, and we use it in all kinds of ways. We're using it to promote webinars. We always put a little webinar preview in our emails. We use it even in the late end of the sales stage process to personalize it and send an email to someone and say, hey, meet the team, and this is what we've put together for you guys. So we're using it a lot of different ways.
That's exciting. I can certainly envision being able to have a sales guy go out and introduce himself virtually while he's out delivering proposals and trying to create the differentiators that you've mentioned. And then do you use some of the traditional things, I think, that people have pounded, you know, for the years, the white papers and things of that nature?
Yep.
Or have you given up on those altogether?
Nope. We still really believe in white papers, and they attract a lot of attention. We've probably changed the way we do them a little bit. In general, we've changed all our content to be a little bit more digestible. So instead of doing the traditional old, long, wordy white papers, you know, we've shortened it, probably added more imagery, but we're still definitely doing white papers.
So you've gone to the snippet version of communicating from a written standpoint, kind of the USA Today flavor? Everybody
yeah,
can
maybe
just
not
take
that
it in a little bite,
for a white
understand?
Paper, but yeah, but definitely not the, you know, mammoth white papers we used to do, so.
And your videos are short and brief, too? People can catch them in a
always.
Quick second?
Yeah. I really feel that, you know, more than 2 minutes in a video, you kind of lose people, so.
Right. And so do you measure the views on those videos, or are you measuring the downloads? And have you seen a significant uptick from when you were not using marketing automation?
Yes.
To what? Any guess at a degree?
Well, I don't know if marketing automation actually affected the videos. I think the videos are the attraction in themselves, to be honest. But I can say that from when we were, say, promoting webinars pre-video to when we were promoting them post-video with using the previews, we've, like, doubled our attendance rate on webinars. So,
great. So I just wanted to make a quick announcement. This is Scott Benedetti. I'm the Director of Demand Generation for the Pettowitz Group. I'm stepping in for Debbie Guy Geese today. Our Chief Revenue Officer had to step away. I'm with Sarah from Building Engines. She's a brand new revenue marketer with her first effort using a marketing automation platform. We're talking a little bit about the content analysis that she did, the things that she thought about when she first selected and implemented a system. And if you folks have questions for her, you can type them into the chat window, or you can call in live and press number 1 to raise your hand. The number is 646-478-5604. And Sarah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the sales guys. They were excited when you showed them what they were going to get. What level of participation and push have you gotten since they've started to see kind of the stars in flames, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I mean, they are just as excited about it because, you know, it's easy for them to go out and get prospecting lists and see how quickly it's uploaded into Marketo and see the results of that as soon as they're biting on emails and biting on campaigns. Yeah, I don't know. They're just there. We added a whole new element, which was important for us in the process. At the end of kind of the marketing qualified stage, we added a telesales touch stage. So when people qualify, they go through telesales first. And so when the lead actually gets to sales, it's a hot lead. It's definitely a lead that's ready. And so I definitely think they appreciate that change.
So then the electronic touches or the digital body language is all measured through a lead scoring mechanism that kicks them over to a telesales person that then does a live personal touch?
Yep, exactly. And that's to filter out, okay, so it gets to the end of that marketing stage, and it's up to the telesales person to determine, okay, this lead is hot, push it to sales. No, it needs a little bit more nurture, push it back into marketing, or they're just not a good fit. So it's kind of
okay.
A filter before it gets to sales.
That's great. I'm sure the sales guys appreciate that. And then the sales guys also, you said, upload their own list. Do they create their own emails, or do you control the message yourself and allow
they
them
do.
To send on their
yeah.
own behalf?
You know, we try to encourage them to use the marketing emails, but they do send their own emails. So I publish a lot of mine, you know, to Salesforce so that they can access them, a lot of our campaigns. But they do use Outlook all the time to send and also track through the marketing automation. So.
Okay, so you've integrated both Outlook and your CRM, which is Salesforce.com, into the overall mix. Now, how many people do you have supporting, you know, the infrastructure, the operations for that setup?
For our marketing automation, or what do you
know, how many on the marketing side, how many on the sales side?
So, like I said, we're small. So on the marketing side, there's actually just two of us. So the amount of content we're pushing out and what we're able to do now with just the two of us is pretty amazing. I think that's the power of marketing automation.
Yeah.
And on the sales side, we have probably six people. So
two people in marketing support, six people in sales,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a telesales touch in between that. Are they part of that marketing?
No, the telesales touch, I guess I would include in the sales side.
Okay. Well, that's great. It sounds like you're generating a lot of interest, just two people supporting six, to achieve the results that you wanted to. What type of feedback have you gotten from the C-level suite, the C-suite, as you've gotten rolling?
You know what? They've seen the change from us creating on-the-fly content, you know, that's kind of one-time use, expensive, time-consuming, to seeing that we're now building content as part of a defined strategy. So that helps them feel comfortable with their investment decisions. So right now we're good. I mean, obviously they want those revenue metrics. They want to see it, in numbers on paper. But
right,
we're getting there.
And so how long have you been live since your first campaign?
So I would say June 1 was when we pretty much launched our first campaign.
So you'll be putting the reports out here at the end of the year, and you'll show some metrics. Those will be your baselines. And
yeah.
I guess you'll accept some goals for 2011.
Exactly.
And so what kind of plans have you been putting together from a content usage standpoint, a marketing usage standpoint for next year?
For next year? Well, right now that we've gone through this whole kind of content process that I said took a long time, now we're just really trying to focus on building really thought out nurturing programs. So we're aiming at one nurturing program per month to build them out until we have all the ones that we think we need to fill the gaps. We're amping up our thought leadership webinar program, so we're looking to do at least 3 webinars a month. And, you know, for our team, small team, that's a lot. So, and that will lead to a lot of content that we can reuse elsewhere, which is
right.
Another part of this whole thing, is to not just make our content one-time use.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. We follow that principle as well. That's great. 3 webinars in a month. Now, are you going to invite different types of or different segments of your database to 3 different webinars, or are you going to invite the same people and see which ones they go to?
You know, I think initially we're going to send it out as a webinar series to a big chunk of the database, and then they can pick and choose what they want to attend.
Right.
But eventually, once we get better at it, I think we'll segment more. And once we realize what people are interested in, obviously we're only going to send them the things they're interested in. So.
Right. And then you mentioned setting up like one nurturing program per month. How do you segment your nurturing? How do you determine who goes where?
So basically, when we went through the whole content audit process and determined our customers' buying process, that's kind of when we were able to determine, okay, what's the most important nurturing campaigns we need to do?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do a few nurturing campaigns for different roles and personas of our prospects. So, i.e., we might have one for the C-level, and we might have one for the operations level. This is real estate. And, you know, then we also determined the major buying questions, so we're going to do nurturing campaigns around that. You know, so a good way to discover that is we recently did a survey of prospects, and we're able to discover kind of the number one issue that real estate operations people are dealing with today, and that's tenant retention in this hard market. So that was key right there. That's how we kind of discovered, okay, well, that will be our first microsite on tenant retention. We'll do a nurturing campaign around it, and that will be, you know, kind of our first theme we'll work on.
Excellent. So you got feedback directly from the prospects as to what they were looking for, and you immediately responded with nurturing campaigns, with content, with a microsite to address those issues. That's fabulous. I can't wait to hear about the results from that.
Yeah.
And your sales guys got to be pumped up about that as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now, are you guys regionally focused, or do you sell nationally?
We're nationally and slightly internationally.
Okay, good. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
And as we look through, I mean, it's been a whirlwind, and, you know, you're on the same journey that all of us revenue marketers are on. What would you say the top 2 or 3 lessons that you've learned so far are?
Take your time. We rushed a lot in the beginning, and then we realized this isn't the right way to go. And it's really important that you do that content audit and content inventory, because you can't know what campaigns to build or what content to build if you haven't mapped that out.
Hmm.
So that was the biggest lesson we learned. And then just that it takes time. You're not going to, like I said earlier, you're not going to see results tomorrow, and you have to realize you're putting the effort in now, and it's going to pay off.
Right. Now, why do you think you rushed? Was that some of the pressure that you had? Or
that was some of the pressure from above.
Enthusiasm?
Yeah, they were excited about it. We wanted it to, you know, everything. People love when things could be done yesterday. So,
right.
I kind of feel in the beginning maybe we didn't learn everything. We made a few mistakes because we didn't go through the normal implementation deployment process.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have taken more time with that, I think.
Okay, good. Well, that kind of leads into one of the questions that we ask every interviewee, and you're under no obligation to answer it, but what do you think some of those mistakes were so that our listeners don't have to make the same ones?
You know, we made a bunch of technical mistakes in rushing to get started, such as uploading lists, and, you know, we didn't know certain things about blocking fields, so we would overwrite phone numbers, and then the sales guys would go crazy because it's the wrong phone number, so technical issues. But also I think what you touched on earlier is looking back in retrospect, I would have brought more feedback from our current clients and prospects in earlier in the process. We did get to that, but I would have focused a lot more on that earlier.
Okay, good. So maybe you'll bring that into the mix as you move forward. Yep. And any other additional feedback that you're getting from clients? Has anybody been concerned about the number of emails that they're getting? Have you implemented an opt-out program for them? What type of feedback do you get from your customers and prospects?
We've gotten a lot of great feedback, especially from customers too, which is key because we do our customers, because it's real estate, you know, they'll get new properties, and so we'll resell the customers a lot. So they're also a prospect for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been hearing from them that it's really differentiated us. We've been sending just a lot of value-added content, building these microsites, and just they appreciate it, and they see the effort that we're putting in into it. So it's been great.
So from an educational standpoint, you really have taken the thought leadership position.
Yep.
And have you seen that separate yourself from the competition in sales cycles? Are the sales guys coming back to you and saying,
We hear it from them, too. I mean, we're not the biggest in our market, but I think we're the only ones doing this, which is great. And, we just are delivering better content now because we're being more thoughtful about how we deliver it, you know, who we're sending it to, what they want to hear. So that's the benefit of marketing automation.
Excellent. And how long have you been marketing for Building Engine?
So I've actually only been here a year. So we've undergone a lot of changes in the year.
And so when you started out, it was just a traditional blast out emails, if they open them, call them type stuff? Or
yeah, it was just a blast out email through even as basic as Outlook. So, yeah. It's just,
any prospect in a storm.
Right.
That's fabulous.
We did the website,
you've done a nice job organizing it.
So, yeah.
Again, folks, this is Scott Benedetti. I am the Director of Demand Generation for the Pettowitz Group. Our CRO, our Chief Revenue Officer, Debbie Gagish, had to step away at the last minute. I've stepped in to talk to Sarah Fisher, the Marketing Communications Director at Building Engines. And if you haven't noticed, Sarah is a brand new revenue marketer. And we thought we would bring a new perspective to revenue marketing. And that is, you know, what happens when you first put your toe in the water. You folks can call in at 646-478-5604. Press number 1 on your dial pad and you could ask a question. Or if you're logged into the chat, you can type in a question for Sarah. If you have some ideas that you'd like to share with us on the show, we'd love to get those down. So far we've talked about the content conundrum, so to speak, and Sarah mentioned the fact that they went through an audit to determine where their content was, what it was, what value it brought, and where it mapped to the buying cycle. That whole effort was preceded by the analysis of what that buying cycle was. So, Sarah, we talked about that buying cycle, and I'm going to have to call you on it. You said you kind of slammed in marketing automation in 2 weeks, but it sounds like you were doing some preliminary work before the actual technology got in the door, right?
Well, not on content, not yet. We had redone the look and feel of the website, redone our branding, and redid our logo, so really did a major overhaul.
Oh, my gosh, yeah,
Then the next step was, okay, let's amp up marketing, and what can we do to do that? So.
Right, and so technology was already at the forefront of people's minds with the new website.
We're a web-based company, a web-based application, so I think we're fortunate in that we appreciate technology. So.
Right. That's great that you get to leverage that. What do you see as your next steps with, utilizing the tools? More of the same or some more unique things?
I want to really get our metrics at their best. I still think there's a little bit of work to do there.
Uh-huh.
And also, like I said, just to get all these nurturing programs in place, because without nurturing programs going on in the background, you're just using an expensive email system, basically. So,
right.
That's where we're headed.
So then you could definitely say there's a difference between what you used before to send emails, which was Outlook or some other tool, and a true marketing automation system, simply because of the nurturing and the scoring, or what would you say your biggest notice?
You're learning things about your customers. Instead of just sending something off, talking about yourself, with marketing automation, you can send something off that you know is what they want to hear because you've seen their behavior, and you can also learn something about them. You know, you create, if you're creating content correctly for a certain role or a stage or a persona, then you know if someone clicks on that piece, then, hey, look, they're in the late stage process because we made that piece for that. So it's important because we're learning things about our prospects along the way.
Okay, great. I think that's a great response. I think that more marketers have to spend more time looking at what their customers are doing in that conversation that occurs digitally. Myself, having been in sales for quite some time, missed that conversation. It used to be, and I may be aging myself here, that you know, prospective customers would call you and ask you for your brochures and would ask you for your literature, and you had an opportunity to establish a personal dialogue. And I find that more prospects now start out with the Google dialogue. They type in their problems, they type in what they think they're looking for, and they do the Google search. And by the time they find, you know, a couple companies to call, they've already narrowed it down to whatever perception they put together from what they saw online.
Exactly.
And they've already made a short list, whereas it used to be, you know, they'd invite everybody in to give them a shot at the, you know, the demo dance or what we used to call a bake-off. Now it's a short list, and it's all about, hey, how fast can you deliver? How cheap can you do it? And you know, you don't have a chance to really establish that differentiator or that value. And it's the content, as you've so accurately mentioned, it's their perception of the content and then actually what you do deliver in the content that establishes that perception in a prospect's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talk about microsites. Define what a microsite is for building engines for you guys.
For us, it's taking a key theme or business issue for our prospects and creating a content-rich, value-added site around it where it's not – we'll put a few things that are building engines related on there, but mostly it's curating. So it's just taking the best of the best content that we can find on the subject. For instance, we recently just did one kind of on, like, risk management. So fire and life safety and that kind of thing for the real estate industry. So all the best of the best we could find on that, put together great checklists, put together blog post resources from all over, and people can access that.
So you're using resources that relate to the theme that are not specific to building engines?
Exactly. So we have those, plus we'll put a few building engine things on there.
Right.
But really what it's about is establishing ourselves as a thought leader and having free, key is free. We don't make them fill out a form for every single piece of content we put on the website. Stuff that they can access, and then, you know, at the same time we have our own things on there showing how we relate, and, you know, this is what building engines does for fire and life safety.
Okay. And so when you say micro, how many pages are these sites on average, and how often do you build them? And or how often do you anticipate building them?
We're going to build, we have like five major ones we're going to build that will actually be more of a website. Right now, we've been doing it kind of through landing pages, a series of landing pages, so it mimics the look and feel of a website, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we'll have, you know, a homepage just stacked with information, and then it will link off to many different resources.
Excellent. So, you know, we love the microsite concept, and we do it similarly on topical areas, typically industry. And it's a content set unto its own that's not just blasting the Pedowitz Group message, but it is an aggregation of different resources that we found people want to utilize. You know, they can download ROI tools, or they can download podcasts and things like that, and access to these radio shows as we record them. I love the fact that you bring in outside thought leadership content. I think it shows the bigness and the level of confidence that you have in your product and the capabilities of your product. I was wondering if you had any feedback from customers, prospects, or anybody that interacts with these sites to that regard.
Well, I mean, the metrics are the feedback for me, and it's,
okay.
You know, just seeing the uptick, you know, our last, you know, this is recent. We just started doing this again, probably 2 months ago with the microsites, but the response has been phenomenal to everyone, you know, just all over the site, downloading things, and also viewing the building engines thing. So it's doing what we want. They're getting free, great, value-added content, and then they're also, you know, hearing the building engine's name, and hopefully that's the point when they're ready, they'll come to us for, you know, the solution.
So you're driving them through email to the microsite,
mm-hmm,
built on
yeah.
landing pages, and you're seeing them go through the content and download and enjoy and spend time on that site. But you're also seeing them bounce over to your regular site.
Yes, for sure. And it's, yeah.
I was hoping for a longer answer, but that's a pretty good
oh,
one,
sorry.
I think.
No,
because
no, they
ultimately
are. Sorry,
you're driving traffic, and that's the goal, right?
Yep, they're perusing the information, and what's great is that it's we've seen a lot of people who were just sitting in inquiry stage and not biting on anything, really
right.
digging the microsites. So that's also key to get people active.
Okay. And do you use now the marketing automation tool to update fields in your CRM automatically based on what people are doing, or are you using any what I call a data management aspect of that tool?
Yeah, we're doing a little bit of that.
Excellent.
We have a lot of fields that map, you know, just especially for sourcing.
Yeah.
Having that update to our Salesforce so the sales guys can see, you know, okay, how did this person come in? Anything else they need to know about them? Detail
right.
on that person.
Excellent. And now these microsites also contain videos as well?
They do, always.
All right, good. So clearly I have to go check out your microsites because I think now I'm envious. I have microsite envy because it sounds like they're really performing well. And if you don't mind, I may actually borrow a copy. And I encourage all our listeners to visit your site as well. Why don't you give a plug for your site, a shout-out?
Okay, so the website is www.buildingengines.com.
Excellent. So everybody go out there and visit buildingengines.com. Let's give Sarah a bump in traffic today from the show. Or if you download this show, as we've noticed, after hours, on demand, go out and visit Building Engines. They've got some excellent marketing content there that all of us could learn from. And Sarah's been kind enough to tell us a bit about it. Sarah, I want to thank you. We're going to just begin to wrap up here as we move forward. If there are any questions, again, you can call in to 646-478-5604. You can type in the chat room. Oh, look at that. We did just get a question. Just curious, what is your definition or how does a microsite different from a blog?
Well, I mean, the way I see it is that a blog is your company writing. And, yeah, you can be writing about value-added topics, but it's still seen very much as building engines talking. The value of a microsite, I think, is that it doesn't have to be called buildingengines.com. You can give it a name you want. Like our one on energy management, we call the Green Spot. And it just has more of a thought leadership aspect to it, I think, and people feel a little more comfortable going in and clicking around and taking advantage of the content.
Okay. I think that's a great answer. I would echo that sentiment. I would say a blog is more of a running dialogue between a group of people. So you're posting things and thoughts on a blog and people are responding and commenting, and it's a back and forth over a period of time on various topics. And a good blog is going to be categorized and separated. And it may or may not follow a thought theme or a value theme like Sarah described. So certainly anything on the web could be said to say, you know, you could say that it's a site, you could say that it's a blog, but a microsite usually is a microcosm of just one point, and its intent is to answer that point, provide assets, and a portal to other locations for those questions, and then hopefully generate some business for the sponsors on that site, depending on what, you know, your overall goal is for the site itself. And hopefully that answers your question. And then we do have a response. So it looks like we'll get a little chat going here in the chat window. That's great. Would GreenSpot have any of your Building Engines logos on it? So is the site, does it say sponsored by Building Engines? And, you know, is it clearly a company site or is that more in the background?
We're on there. Our logo is on there. It's not the most prominent thing. And like I said, we do have some Building Engines assets on there, but I would say 80% of the content on the Green Spot is not Building Engines related.
Right. Okay, good. I think that's the right way to go when you're doing a microsite. So let me bring up the one thing that you haven't mentioned, Sarah. Is there any thought given at your place to social media?
Yes. It kind of fell off the wayside as we've been going. Like I said, we have a small team and we've dedicated focused on this content project. So that's kind of the next step for us, is to get back on that. We do tweet, we do have a Facebook page, but we're definitely not utilizing it, I don't think, as much as we can. So that's the next big project.
Okay, so it's in the future, and
yep.
You'll probably bring it into what you're doing from a standpoint of marketing automation, CRM, and all the different sites that you mentioned. It looks like we've got a couple things coming in. And maybe we mentioned this. What did you say you found the optimal time or length of a video is for you? Have you analyzed what videos are getting watched, what's not being watched,
yeah.
What's getting cut off early?
So basically what we've discovered is that, well, it depends what it is, first of all, just to say that. A webinar, we never do longer than like 15 minutes. And you can take one big long webinar you do, pre-record it, and break it up into four different shorter segments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing we found. And then as far as we've kind of gotten rid of the whole demo aspect, a big long demo, and broken it up into short, little, digestible, two-minute pieces on each of our different features, basically. So in general, we do a preview in an email, no more than 60 seconds. Like if you're doing a preview for a webinar, very, very short.
Okay. So in an email, it's the very brief commercial, 60
yep.
seconds or less. For a webinar of its own, you'll break it up into no more than 15 minutes. And what about those videos that you can see right on the site? A couple minutes,
still
no more than 2 minutes,
yes,
you think?
2 minutes. 2 minutes is usually what we try to do.
Okay.
Or 90
And then you
seconds.
Talked about your effort on white papers. What did you find white papers were running on a page count? What did you try and cut them back to, or what are you cutting them back to?
So it depends on the topic, but our last white paper was also on energy management, and I believe it's like 8 pages long. So, but it has pictures in it. It's not just text. And, you know, the response to that, the white paper, has been huge.
Okay, good. So 8 pages is, you know, you cover the whole world of energy management in 8 pages. I think that is absolutely outstanding. And
well, it's not the whole world of energy management. That's big. It's the topic was basically demystifying energy data management, so
excellent.
How you collect that data and
right, because it's a different world, you know, in real estate. I think you operate in a B2B fashion, but your customers are operating clearly in a business-to-consumer fashion, and they're facing issues
mm-hmm.
because of the economy, and they're looking to save money. I think it's a genius topic. It's a great use of content, and clearly has driven, value to your site and your microsite.
Yep.
It looks like we continue to get a couple questions along the videos. So clearly, videos are a bandwagon, right? And describe how you send a video in an email, please.
Okay, so obviously the video is not playing in the email, but we always take a screenshot of the video with a little play button on it, and that screenshot goes in the video. And we'll also have just a text link to the video as well. You know, not everyone clicks on images. Some people click on text. And then that will take them to a landing page that will have the video ready to play once they click.
Okay, good. So they click through. It's a click-through link
mm-hmm.
For them to opt in to watch that video. I think that's pretty standard. And do you use any specific software for videos? Or describe the creation process and the editing process. Do you have a special video editor person on staff?
So that's me. So basically, I went through a bunch of things. I'm not a video editor. Let me just put that out there. So this was like what's going to be the easiest tool for me to use and do this quickly. And I actually use Camtasia to edit. I don't know if anyone out there has heard of it, but it's a great tool. You can put PowerPoint slides in with video in with audio, and it's very easy to edit and produce
okay.
and share. So that's what I've been using mostly.
And who are your, you know, who are the featured stars of your videos?
You know, again, it depends. If it's for webinars, the person giving the webinar is a featured star. A lot of times
okay.
they're not available to do the video. If they're, you know, in a different area or can't do it, I do the preview.
Right.
If it's for a sales process, it's the sales guy. Just sets up the tripod. We have a mic and the little flip vid and does a quick 60-second introduction to whoever his contact is.
Okay.
And sometimes it's executive if it's a big
right.
account.
Okay, so you do get your executives involved. There's none of that, oh, don't take my picture thing going on.
Nope, they're happy to go along. I mean, you discover early on in the process who's good on, not everyone is good on video. Some people get very nervous and just aren't
yeah.
the right fit, but you learn who's good and who's not pretty quickly.
Right, within the first 3 seconds, they either ham it up or they're all done, right? You just kind of let them record and you move on to the next person. Is that how you do it?
Right, so we have a couple people, I think, that are real go-tos because they're comfortable with it.
Uh-huh.
But pretty much
everybody
has
done it. Yeah, I think that's got to be, that's a challenge. I love the fact that you're not busy trying to, you know, spend a lot of time and money upgrading it to some level of professionalism that the company's not at yet.
And
you're just being real and communicating with people.
Yeah, research has actually shown that if it's too professional, people find it standoffish and kind of fake. And the more real it is, a person just sitting and talking, it gets much better response.
Okay. And these videos are available. What would be the URL that somebody might be able to visit to see this? Or could they do a search on YouTube for you? Do you have a YouTube site?
We have so many videos. We do, but a lot of them are on our website. If you just even go to our resource center, any of our webinars on demand will have, you can watch a preview of the video for the webinar, and then you can watch the webinar video itself.
Excellent. So just that website again, Sarah, one more time.
www.buildingengines.com.
All right, so buildingengines.com, you can see their team's videos, get some ideas, sign up for their webinars, and learn how Sarah's beginning to develop her marketing machine there. And I guess your next requisition will be for some new sales, some additional salespeople. You've generated so much demand, right?
We're actually in that process right now, so I think we're hiring a few new people. So it's all happening.
That's exciting. You've got to be proud of what you've done so far. I know that we're excited to be talking to you about it and to be working with you about it. I'm sure Debbie is sorry that she missed our show today. I'm going to give everybody just one more chance to see if they have any more questions. We certainly do appreciate your participation. Just so that you folks know that are listening, and there are still a bunch of people online, our show has crossed the 10,000 downloads mark, the 10,000 listens. It appears that most people like to download the show to their iPod, their iPad, their iPhone, or whatever thing they're using these days. You can get us off of iTunes. It's a free download. We've got over 40 shows over the last 2 years, and there's some great educational material from revenue marketers just like yourselves, people that are out there like Sarah Fisher that are generating revenue through a variety of tools. You can see today's show is not just about marketing automation. Marketing automation is just the wheel that Sarah's using to deliver valuable content and separate building engines from much bigger competitors. So I think we'll move forward to close there. I'll make one announcement next week at 2 o'clock. Let all your friends know that we've got a special guest. And if you've got any sports fans, and Sarah, I believe you're from the Northeast, right? Are you up in Waltham?
Yeah, we're in Waltham.
Waltham area?
Yeah. Waltham. Yep.
So next week we've got a friend of yours online. Second time, she was part of our show last year. Laura Zexter is with TD Garden. TD Garden is known best by the Boston Bruins, and they are going to talk about what they've done in marketing automation and tying in social media and how they've added to their fan base and built revenue through the use of all of these tools. So next week, you might want to just click on the screen there and register for a reminder. Laura Zexter at the TD Garden is going to be our guest. Let me just thank you, Sarah. You were great today. I know we were both a little nervous when Debbie said she wasn't going to be able to do the show. You really have supported me in answering your questions. I am definitely going to go visit your site and download some of the videos and see if I could borrow some of the hints and tips that you gave us today. So thank you, Sarah.
Great.
Fisher, the Marketing Communications Director at Building Engines. Any parting thoughts, Sarah?
Nope, just if you don't have marketing automation, you don't know what you're missing, honestly. You can get a lot more done, so that's
there
all
is
I'll have
no
to say.
Doubt. Two people generating enough business for six sales reps and going out to hire more. Clearly, this tool has doubled or better than doubled your team's capacity. Sarah, thank you again. Debbie will be in touch to thank you personally. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, everybody, that's going to download the show later tonight. We look forward to seeing you next time. That being said,
bye-bye.
This is Scott from the Pettos Group. Bye-bye.